Read me romance. Read, read me romance. Read me romance. Read, read me romance.
You could take a look in a book, that's fine. Or you could sit back, relax, and unwind and
read me romance. Read, read me romance.
Today's episode of Read Me Romance is brought to you by the 400 receipts in the bottom of my purse that I just threw away. I hope those weren't important. Hey, lady listeners, it's Tessa Bailey. Happy middle of the week. I'm here with the third installment of The Objection by Winter Renshaw. I know you guys are dying to find out what happens next because we kind of left, like, every day leaves you on a little bit of a cliffhanger with this one, but I assure you that you're going to love it. And I'm going to read you another wedding story because that's kind of our theme this week, and it's from a lady listener. I have to say her name because it's part of the story, Keshia. And I will read what she said here. Okay. My mom and stepfather have known each other since I was a kid. My mom used to babysit my stepbrother. Both my mother and stepfather lost their spouses in the fall of 2008 to cancer, and we supported each other's families while we were at the hospital together. A few years later, my stepfather called my mom and asked her out. He actually called from the bathroom, which we will never let him live down. They have been inseparable ever since. But you asked about weddings, so here's a short, sweet version of their wedding story. They had a small riverside wedding with just their children and the preacher. I love that. My stepfather had asked my sister and I for permission to marry our mother before he proposed. He had recently spelled my name incorrectly in a text, so I, being a lovable smartass, said, "Of course you can, as long as you learn how to spell my name before then. If you don't, then I might just have to object." I totally forgot about this until the day of the wedding. When the preacher asked if anybody had an objection, my stepfather looked right at me and said, "Keshia." The poor preacher was clueless, but the rest of us laughed, and I said that they could proceed. I love him so much, and I'm so glad that he and my mom found each other, found love again with each other. Oh, and you can totally say my name in the episode if you choose to. Thank you for that. That is so priceless and sweet. I have like a real soft spot for those kinds of stories in real life about people that kind of like had tragic things happen to them but find that happiness again. I'm sure that there's a lot about you, like you out there listening, who have either lived through this or know someone who's lived through this, like just had a terrible thing happen to them and maybe connected through it with someone else. And I think that's a beautiful thing. It's like beauty through tragedy. And I just absolutely love that story. So on that note, I'm going to send you into another story with a happy ending. This is the third installment of The Objection by Winter Renshaw, and I'll catch up with you guys on the other side. Bye.
Chapter 3. Olivia. Olivia? Olivia, did you hear what I just said? My mother pulls me from a little morning reverie. Your sister is bringing your dress up now. We're getting ready in your suite, if that's okay. Of course. I insert myself back into the present moment, trying to forget the dream I had last night. I was walking down the aisle, dressed in white, flowers galore, a string quartet playing Canon in D, and when I got to the end, it wasn't Dorian standing there. It was Gabriel, the divorce attorney I met in the bar last night. It's the strangest thing, but in that dream, I was happy. No, not happy. Ecstatic. Everything about that scene felt right and natural and flooded my body with warmth and fullness. It felt so real, even after I woke up. Still does. But I need to snap out of it because I'm marrying Dorian, and that dream meant absolutely nothing, as most dreams do. A knock at the door is answered by my mother. My sister Amelia walks in, carrying my dress in two hands. It's bigger than she is. Originally, I'd picked a more modest number, something with less chiffon and tulle and more ivory lace and a classic silhouette, but my future mother-in-law insisted it would look ridiculous. "It'd be like wearing denim to the Met Gala," she'd said as she lifted a teacup to her lips, pinky finger extended. Another knock follows, and my mother rushes to answer it. "Elizabeth! Morgan!" she says to my other bridesmaids. "Don't we all look bright-eyed and bushy-tailed this morning?" Elizabeth is all smiles for me, but it's the strangest thing. She's got bags under her eyes and looks like she's 2 seconds from rolling back into bed. Her dark hair is piled into a messy bun on top of her head, and she rubs her eyes before collapsing into a chair. If I recall, she was one of the first ones to retire to her room after the rehearsal dinner last night. She said she was exhausted from the week's festivities and wanted to call it a night early. Best friends since second grade, I know her better than anyone else, which is why I know she's been struggling ever since I got engaged. She was always the one obsessed with planning her future wedding and going the whole marriage and babies route, and I always had the take-it-or-leave-it mindset. Last year, she told me there was some guy she was into at work, but he refused to commit. She admitted that despite knowing he was unavailable, she could never say no to him. She's never been lucky in love, but I know someday she'll find the perfect guy, and he'll have been worth the wait. The phone rings, and my mother rushes to answer it. When she's finished, she turns to me. Room service is delivering a gift. I know it's tradition for the bride and groom to get each other a gift the day of their wedding, but what do you get the man who has everything? Silver monogrammed cufflinks with our wedding date inscribed on them. That's what. He'll think of this day every time he wears them. A text comes through on my phone, and I realize I haven't heard from Dorian all morning. I'm sure he's busy with his groomsmen and appeasing his mother's demands, since she single-handedly orchestrated this entire event, and every minute of it has to go as planned. But the message is from the makeup artist, telling me she's running 5 minutes behind. I tell her it's no problem, and set the phone down. A few minutes later, room service delivers a little blue box with a white ribbon, along with a note on his cardstock letterhead.
My dearest Olivia, from the moment you walked into my life, you showed me exactly the kind of man I wanted to be, the kind of man worthy of spending his forever with you. From here to eternity, can't wait to grow old together. Yours forever, Dorian.
I tug the white ribbon and lift the lid of the box. A shiny gold locket greets me, along with my new monogram engraved on the front. It's beautiful, a classic and timeless piece for the ages. And it'd be perfect if I weren't allergic to gold. A fact I've pointed out a myriad of times over the years until he finally stopped giving me jewelry altogether. I try not to take it personally that he forgot, or take it as a sign. Let me see. My mother rushes to my side, gasping as if I'm showing her the Hope Diamond. She's always been one for theatrics. Simply gorgeous. But you can't wear that. You're allergic. Hair and makeup is here, one of my bridesmaids announces from the other side of the suite. A team of men and women enter with their train cases and counter-height chairs and duffel bags and begin scanning the room for the best makeshift studio. Here we go. The rest of the morning is a blur, one consisting of highlighting and contouring and hairspray and perfume, diamond earrings, and room service fruit plates and cucumber sandwiches. Before I realize it, it's almost 1:45, and we're due to head down to the Rose Garden. By the time we get there, and I see my father in his tux with tears in his eyes, everything gets real. My stomach knots. My palms sweat. Elizabeth hands me my bouquet.
You ready, Bean?
My dad asks, calling me by my childhood nickname. I nod, my throat too tight for me to speak. I have absolutely no idea if these are good nerves or bad nerves, but the music is playing, the bridal party is marching down the aisle 2 by 2, and this is happening. I can only hope that when I get to the altar and look into my beloved's eyes, all this tension, all this doubt, will fade away. Last night, I lay in his arms and told him I was scared that we weren't making the right decision. He assured me he was mine forever, no one else's, and that it would always be that way. He promised he'd love me until his last dying breath. I closed my eyes and dreamed of Gabriel.
Our guests rise as my father leads me down a white silk aisle covered in pastel pink rose petals. Through the pale haze of my veil, I look to my future husband, our gazes intersecting. And in that moment, I think of his sweet words, the way he took me in his arms and softened my worries, shouldered my concerns. Dorian smiles, dimples and all, and the knots in my stomach begin to untangle.
Dearly beloved,
our officiant, the Hawthorne's beloved and longtime minister, begins,
we are gathered here today, and in the presence of God, to witness the joining in holy matrimony of Dorian Clark Hawthorne III and Olivia Ann Peretti. Marriage is an honorable state, instituted by God since the first man and woman walked this earth. Therefore, it is not to be entered into lightly, but reverently. Who gives this woman to this man?
My arm is still linked in my father's, and I look to him, finding him holding a subdued smile. His blue eyes are glassy, and he's doing his best to keep it together. I squeeze his arm, and he pats my hand.
Her mother and I do,
my father answers. From my periphery, I spot Dorian's mother dabbing the corners of her eye with a linen handkerchief. I'd be willing to bet those aren't happy tears, but she makes them appear that way, nevertheless. My father lifts my veil and kisses my cheek before placing my hand in Dorian's and returning to his seat next to Mom.
Into this holy estate, these two persons present come now to be joined,
the officiant continues.
If anyone can show just cause as to why these two should not be married, speak now or forever hold your peace.
My stomach clenches for a second. I thought we'd agreed to leave that part of the ceremony out. In my opinion, it's a bit old-fashioned, as well as unnecessary. No one objects at weddings. This isn't the movies. A moment later, the minister's eyes lift over his wire-rimmed glasses toward the sea of guests, and then I hear the gasps. Turning toward the crowd of friends and family, I can't believe what I'm witnessing. Someone is objecting at our wedding. And that someone is Gabriel. Dorian releases my hand and takes a step, like he's going to confront the man in front of all these people. Then he stops, knowing his parents would heavily frown upon his making a scene in the middle of his wedding. But honestly, the scene started when Gabriel stood. I reach for Dorian's arm, pulling him back to the altar, though my focus is entirely on the man in the cashmere sweater and dark khakis with the striking golden gaze and inky dark hair. Our guests begin to whisper and comment among themselves, and I don't need to glance at my future mother-in-law to know she's in the early stages of a conniption fit. Locking eyes with Gabriel, I mouth the words, "What are you doing?"
"Stopping you from making the biggest mistake of your life,"
he says, loud enough so even the people in the back row can hear him.
"You can't marry him."
Humiliation stains my cheeks a shade of pink as all eyes travel between the two of us.
"Olivia, do you know this man?"
Dorian whispers, leaning close. I turn to him.
"I met him last night. At the bar, we talked, but..."
I'm so confused. We didn't flirt. We didn't do anything inappropriate. We simply had a meaningful conversation, and that was that.
"Can someone call security?"
Dorian calls out, rolling his eyes. His arms lift before clapping against his sides. Someone scrambles toward the hotel, padding over the satin aisle runner and into the grassy space that separates the building from the rose garden.
"Wait,"
I say, gathering my dress in my hands and heading down the aisle toward the back row where Gabriel stands. There's no salvaging this moment, so I might as well hear him out. But I'm going to do it in private, not in front of hundreds of prying eyes and pricked ears.
"Olivia!"
Dorian calls at me like an owner calling their dog.
"Olivia, what do you think you're doing?"
I'll be right back, I tell him. When I reach Gabriel, I motion for him to follow me inside. You're insane, is the first thing I tell him. The second, this better be worth it. But I regret the words the second I say them. If this is worth it, it means the wedding is a mistake. Gabriel's eyes focus on mine, and he licks his lips before pulling in a hard breath.
There's no easy way to tell you this, he says in a way that makes my stomach plummet. But last night, about an hour after you went back to your room, your fiancé came down to the bar. And he was with some girl named Elizabeth.
My heart free falls, and the sting of tears threatens my vision. No, I say. He left my room and went back to his...
Clearly he lied to you.
And Elizabeth is my best friend. My maid of honor. He wouldn't...
He did. And he has. Apparently it's been going on for quite a while,
he tells me.
At least that's what I gathered from the conversation they had.
I think of Elizabeth and the mystery man at work she's been pining after for the last couple of years, the one who's always unavailable and refuses to commit. All this time, was she talking about Dorian? I glance out the glass toward the rose garden. All of it looks so small from here, but I spot Dorian chatting with the minister and Elizabeth avoiding all eye contact. I refuse to believe it. And yet somehow, I do. How do I know you're not making this up? I ask. And how do you know what my fiancé looks like? Maybe it was someone else in the bar last night. He rolls his eyes.
First of all, I saw what he looked like when the two of you were FaceTiming right next to me. And secondly, I have better things to do than crash some stranger's wedding and stand up in front of hundreds of people, making a fool of myself.
As always, the man has a point. Then again, I don't know him from Adam. He could be crazy. I want to see a picture, I tell him. His hand lifts to his jaw, and he forces a breath through his nostrils.
You don't want to see it.
I laugh. Are you joking right now? I need to see it. Have to see it. Want to see it. It's the only way I'm going to believe any of this. Dipping into his back pocket, he slides out a thin black phone and thumbs in his code before tapping on an app and flipping the screen toward me. Sure enough, it's Dorian and Elizabeth. His hands in her hair, his mouth, the very same one that kissed me goodnight, on her mouth. I think I'm going to be sick. I gather my dress and run for the nearest restroom, which I find down the hall and around the corner. My dress, which once fit my body like a glove, now squeezes the life out of me. I can't think. I can't breathe. And I sure as hell can't go back out there and marry that bastard. With my back against the wall, I slide down to the ground until I'm nothing more than a numb woman sitting in a whole mess of tulle and chiffon. I'm hurt. Shocked, devastated, humiliated. But I refuse to cry. He isn't worth a single tear. Someone pushes the door open a few inches, and a second later, a man's voice calls my name. My heart leaps into my throat for a second when I realize it's just Gabriel.
You doing okay?
He asks.
Peachy.
What do you want to do?
He asks. I laugh because it's a strange question, a complicated question, a question for which I have no good answer. Truthfully, I say, I just want to get out of here.
All right, then. Let's go.
I press my palms against the wall and push myself to standing. A moment later, I meet him outside the ladies' room door. His entire expression holds an apology, though he has nothing to be sorry for. If anything, I should be thanking him. He dangles a set of keys.
Where do you want to go?
Anywhere.
Hey, lady listeners, I'm back. I hope you loved that as much as I did. Winter Renshaw has a book coming out in like a week. It's called For Lila Forever, and it's going to be launching at 99 cents. So make sure you add it on your Goodreads. I'll put the link below in the episode description, and make sure you click it on release week so that you get that sale. I'm sure we'll be splashing it all over our social media as well. So just follow us everywhere so you don't miss it, at Remy Romance on Instagram, Remy Romance on Facebook. It all just, we're just constantly making sure you're aware of sales and of our podcast authors and what they're doing. Winter Renshaw also has the PS series on Kindle Unlimited. It's fabulous. Everyone loves it. Go check it out. There's a giveaway happening at readmeromance.com. So make sure you head over there and enter for a chance to win. And you can pre-order the Objection and ebook. So all those links are handy in the episode description. And I think that's it for today. Oh, wait, there's one more big piece of news. Our very own Alexa Riley put a book out earlier this season called Mated to the Reaper, and it's out in ebook today. So make sure you click that. You know how they do. There's going to be like 700 epilogues. So make sure you go snatch that up. I'll put the link below, and I'll be back tomorrow with the fourth installment of The Objection. In the meantime, have a great night. Love you all. Bye.
Read me romance. Read me romance. Read me romance. Read me romance. You could take a look in a book, that's fine. Or you could sit back, relax, and unwind and read.